good to see everybody tonight. I guess I'll need to remember that if you want to chase everyone off, preach on dating, right? No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure, as mentioned, there are some that were not feeling well tonight that weren't able to, or that aren't able to be here tonight, and maybe perhaps some others traveling. I believe after tonight, I might have one more lesson. I believe I have one more lesson on parenting and the family, and it kind of brings it all to a close. If you've been following kind of the track of the series, we really started at the beginning. And the positive aspects of parenting and training and the things that we need to be doing constantly in teaching and admonishing our children to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And then we began to talk about parenting from various stages of life. You know, we talked about disciplining children, the importance of that, and then talked about as they age who their peers will be, their friends and influences, and those types of things. And then eventually working to things that currently young adults, teenagers face with these technology advances that we have seen in our country, to dating, and now finally sexual experimentation or sexual dangers that our children will face. And then the last lesson, I believe, will deal more with as our children become of that age where they now are old enough to start their own home. How does the home transition from there? And so it brings kind of in a order fashion the series to a close. Lord willing, that will be next week. So let's talk now about the sexual dangers. I believe it's probably one of the biggest threats, dangers our children faces because of the consequences of it. We understand that sin is sin before God. Sin is transgression of law. It really doesn't matter what kind of sin it is. God's no respecter of sins. But our children may be in their younger years, as you have or I may have been, guilty of perhaps stealing or maybe cheating on a test. And these things are sins. However, life can be recovered eventually from that and returned back to normal, sometimes rather quickly on particular sins. But this particular sin is one that has almost lasting consequences. Consequences that are very deep and far-reaching that will go well beyond their childhood years, well beyond their teenage years, even their young adult years, and even as they get older as well, depending on which particular consequences they encounter because of giving in to sexual temptation. And so it is one that is very, very important for us to think about. And we're going to, as I mentioned, spend most of our time in the book of Proverbs tonight. I believe it was the main concern of the proverb writer as he's writing about various things to grow in wisdom about. You may not know this, but Proverbs essentially was a book for Hebrew children. It was the training manual that Jews would take when they thought about raising their children. And as you begin to study it, you see why that's the case. Proverbs is essentially divided into three sections. And two of those sections deal with a parent to a child and pointing them to the right potential mate and pointing them away from the wrong potential mate. And there's a series of talks that take place in the book of Proverbs. And those essentially, ultimately, make up two sections of the book. The first and the last. And then in between is a lot of the various statements of wisdom. Axioms of truth. Kernels of truth that are given that we are so familiar with associating Proverbs with. All these wise sayings. But before it and after it, we see why it was considered this book to raise children on. In fact, if you begin there in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple. Notice that. To give prudence to the simple. To the young man, knowledge and discretion. And wise men will hear and increase learning. And a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb, an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instructions of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. And so we see there very at the beginning, Solomon now speaking as if he's sitting down with his children, beginning to impart to them wisdom. Wisdom. In fact, you'll see that this is very abundant as you look at the beginnings of the various chapters. Chapter 2, verse 1, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you." Chapter 3, verse 1, "My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands." And notice verse 11, "My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord." Verse 21, "My son, let them not depart from your eyes." Chapter 4, verse 1, now here he's sitting down with his children, "Hear, my children, the instructions of a father." And then in chapter 4, verse 10, "Hear, my son, and receive my sayings." Verse 20, "Hear, my son, give attention to my words, incline your ears to my sayings." Chapter 5, verse 1, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom." Chapter 6, verse 1, "My son, if you become surety for your friend." 7, verse 1, "My son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you." Chapter 8, verse 32 and verse 33, "Now therefore listen to me, my children, for blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not disdain it." And so you get the picture of Solomon there sitting with his children, wanting to explain these words, and how it's so easily for a parent to do the same. To take these words and make them their own, and to say it as if they're sitting with their, "My children, hear me. My son, my daughter, listen to these words and treasure them in your hearts." And so you see very easily, it is this parenting book. Just like a glove fitting into a hand. This inspired book of wisdom. Of a way in which to raise our children to be godly offspring. Now I want you to think for a moment the source. Solomon, right? We saw that there at the very beginning. Solomon. A man with loads of baggage and failure. You'd think that, why would God choose this guy to deliver these kinds of words about this particular subject? And yet God did. And I think that's an inspiration to a lot of us that have a lot of baggage and failure in our background, in our past. And we think, well, I'm certainly not going to be capable of sharing, you know, with my children what they ought to do. I'm certainly not going to be respected. But look, here's a man who had 1,000 wives, right? Or 700 wives, 300 concubines. And yet, he's giving the talk. Over and over and over again. God used him. And God expects us to be used for him as well. Though, despite any of our shortcomings of the past. Solomon certainly had that himself. And so we need to be careful that we don't ignore the opportunities that God places before us. You know, as I mentioned, the first 9 chapters is essentially like a father having the talk, or talks, plural, many of them. And we talked a little bit this morning about how sometimes it's uncomfortable for parents to talk about that with their children, and yet we have to break through that mold and understand that that's part of the nature in which God made us, not to be ashamed if we are trying to explain it from a godly standpoint. I've got this quote from a book written by Oscar Lowry, and I want to share it with you because I think it's telling. He says, "The sex instinct is sacred, for it is ordained by God, for the propagation of the human race. If there's anything evil about the subject, the evil is in your mind and not in the mind of the child. The child who asks these questions is naturally they would ask, where does the rain come from? So let us remember that. They are like a clean slate. It is us that has the baggage. And we want to be able to then paint upon their clean canvas the ways of God and the testimonies of the truth. So let us turn to these first 9 chapters and let's see how this young man was instructed about the kind of woman to watch out for. And at the end of the book, we'll see the kind of woman he tells to go after and to look for. This also applies to girls and women as well. The kind of man to look out for and the kind of man to search after. So he starts by saying the danger begins with who it is that you run with and hang out with. And if you might remember, we've covered that in one of the lessons before. But look in Proverbs chapter 1, there verse 8, "My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother, for there'll be graceful ornaments on your head and chains about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' the idea is don't go. Don't go. Because look at what they're involved in trouble. They're involved with things that will take their soul away. Verse 14, if they say, 'Cast your lot among us, let us have one purse,' my son, do not walk with them. Keep your foot from their path." You know, Solomon was concerned about his child's friends. Like any parent is, right? And he also recognized the concept of peer pressure without using those terms, peer pressure. Right? When they say, if they say, "Come with us," plural, right? You see, one person set against a crowd is difficult. Now, if it's just one-on-one, it's a little bit easier to turn down, but it's much harder when it's the gang, when it's the bunch, when it's the friends that are trying to get you to do something. The tremendous peer pressure. Verse 14, "Cast your lot in among us. Come join us. Be part of us. Do the things that we are doing." He says, just don't even walk their way. Verse 15, "I know they're cool people, but they're not right before God. They're Satan's workers doing Satan's bidding. This will be the crowd that will influence you and your purity. The crowd that will push you to give up your virginity in exchange for some high fives. Sold very cheaply." There's a reason why Solomon started with this first, the friend aspect. If you think about his child, Rehoboam, it didn't really click, did it? Rehoboam ran with the wrong crowd, listened to the younger counselors, and split the kingdom. So, even still, when it doesn't work at home, it's still godly advice, what God would have to be done. So the first talk takes place in chapter 2, and you begin there in verse 1. He says, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment, lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." And so he starts first with the heart. That you gotta love God's instruction, love God's word. Otherwise, I'll just be talking and it'll be like, "Mom, mom, 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 mom," and just going in one ear and out the other. But if you truly want to be pleasing to God, then listen to me. Listen to me. So then in verse 16, he says, this instruction is to deliver you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house leads down to death and her paths to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the paths of life. Wow, what a first talk. That's pretty intense, isn't it? He's essentially saying what I said at the beginning. You go this route, you cross that line, you give your virginity away, your life is forever changed. That doesn't mean it's forever ruined, but it takes a different course. And it could potentially be ruined forever. Your life is never going to be the same. There's complications, young man, that you cannot see that will drag you down to death. Now, he starts off by talking about the way this enticement begins. He says that she uses flattering words, verse 16, who flatters with her words. Oh, you're so cute. Oh, wow, you're so handsome. She used that line probably times before. Watch out for that, he says. I mean, she's telling you what you'd like to hear. That doesn't mean that she doesn't believe it, but she's also wanting to get something out of this as well. Watch out for this, he says. Don't forget your covenant with God as she forgets her covenant with God. Her life leads down to death. Now, he's saying how it is very easy to enter in, but very hard to come back. Once you're in, you're in. Once you're in, you're in. And you can develop an appetite for this particular loose lifestyle. And he says, if you do these things, that means it's a choice. All sexual activity is. If represents a decision that every youth must make. And Solomon recognized that as he shares of this. If you do this, it's a choice. You, son, can either go the way of wisdom, of true love, and happiness, or turn your back on that, and instead you'll find bitterness and sorrow and potentially death. Spiritual death always, but potentially physical as well. As mentioned, one is introduced to these permissive lifestyles at a very early, early age. I was talking with one after services this morning, and you know, he was talking about his parents and various things, and it was a different day. Even though many of our parents were raised in a day that was starting to become more open, this free love of the 60s and 70s. But it is just snowballed. It has snowballed today, where a child, they say, on average watches 4 to 5 hours of TV a day. And over thousands of images are entering into their mind per day. And many of these legitimize bad activity. Now it's even filtering into cartoons. There was one that my family enjoyed watching some, and just learned that one of the characters on this cartoon, this Voltron cartoon, was revealed to be a homosexual character. I mean, it's just a children's cartoon. So that ends that for the Mons family. So the devil seeks to hook them early. And so when you hear of 5- and 6-year-olds that have boyfriend and girlfriends, and I know it's a kind of a playful, innocent mind, you know, that was instilled in them early. I still remember, it was many years ago, but it was a child. They were at that age, 6 years old, and they came to me and they said how they had their first kiss at school on the lips with a boy. And they were 6 years old, and it was almost kind of bragging a little bit about it. And I just looked at them as serious as a heart attack, and I said, I'm not happy about that. I'm not pleased about that. That's not right. Way too young. All these things set dangerous precedents for the years ahead for a child. And here, this father to a son is saying, watch out for these things. Watch out. Now look at the second talk. In Proverbs chapter 5, which is essentially almost the entire chapter, he begins, verse 1, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may perceive discretion, that your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. So he gets back to that, you know, she knows all the right words to say, the buttons to push, to stroke the ego. Verse 4, but in the end she's as bitter as wormwood, which was a plant that would emit a green oil that could be fatal to one. She's as sharp as a two-edged sword. We know what swords do. They're meant to pierce and to kill. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Unless you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. She'll tell you she loves you, but it's not reality. You're just number 42 in a long line of others. Her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others. You know what he's talking about there? This son's sexual purity. Nowadays, if you're a virgin, you're considered weird and strange, right? But God says, it's your honor. Lest you give your honor to others. That's why I said this morning, then be weird according to the world's standards. But according to God's, you are honorable. Lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. You see, this can have lasting long life effects. I know of individuals that are remorseful and regretful of playing around in their teenage years, and now they're in their 30s, and they have a sexually transmitted disease, and there's nothing they can do. It is in them. There's nothing they can do about it. When your flesh is consumed, when you mourn at last, when the flesh and your body are consumed, and you say, verse 12, oh, how I hated instruction and my heart despised correction. I've not obeyed the voice of my teachers. And my daddy told me so. Mother told me better. I didn't listen. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and the congregation. So he advised them, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountain be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the street, let them be only for your own and not for your strangers. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Again, like we said, he's talking about sexual innuendo here, essentially, that you fulfill yourself with your wife and just share them only with her. Don't disperse your waters abroad. Verse 19, as a loving deer and graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. And always be enraptured with her love. You see, it's a beautiful thing in marriage. It's not shameful or sinful. It's beautiful. For why should you, my son, verse 20, be enraptured by an immoral woman and embraced in the arms of seductress? You see, it's all about the way in which it is utilized for God and His plan, or against God and His plan. And he's saying marriage is better. Marriage is honorable. The bed is undefiled there. But sex outside, why, it's devastating. It's devastating. You know, the Jews were given strict order to not marry outside their nation. They were heathens that didn't know God. They didn't know God's testimonies. And so they were given to immorality, all kinds of perversity. And God said, I'm tossing them out of land because of their perversity. And here you also see that he's encouraging his son to think about who it is that he looks for to be married to. Verse 10, lest aliens be filled with your wealth, lest your labors go to the house of a foreigner. He was encouraging his young child to find someone among his people of like precious faith. And to not do so, well, is to also ask for hardships. Remember Samson? That's exactly what the father and the mother were trying to do with Samson. They were trying to be like a proverb for a father and mother. And say, stay among your people. And he went out for all the others and Delilah. And what did it eventually do? Just like Proverbs, eventually her steps laid hold to hell. Her way was the way of death. You know, when I was younger, I dated those that had different religious backgrounds. Some, none at all. And I realized in those situations, we were not heading to the same place. We were not on the same page, religiously speaking. They did not have the same values. And you have to wonder, what would it be like then when we have kids? And we have to share. And I know what I'm going to share is going to conflict with what they would share. And, And so you realize this is not an ideal situation. And God is telling the parent and the parent to the child, watch out for that. Watch out for that. The third talk in chapter 6, there in verse 23, he says, "For the commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress. Do not lust for her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. For by means of harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread." He's talking about becoming weak and undesirable. "And an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent." Well, what he's saying by these words of wisdom is that you're always going to think you're stronger than you really are. You're always going to think, it'll be okay. I can go there. Mom, Dad, get off my kid. I'll be fine. You always think you're stronger than you really are. And that's what he's telling to his son here. You've got to watch out. You can't take fire to your business. I mean, do you think you can go to the fireplace and pick up a log and hold it to your chest and not be burned? No, you will be burned. You will be burned. It doesn't matter how strong you actually think you are. You will be burned. Son, you'll think you can always get just a little bit closer to that line. Maybe hold that kiss just a little bit longer. And then just turn it off like a light switch. No, no. You'll be reduced to a crust of bread. You will be weak. And you will lose your virginity. See, to think that way is the thought of every fool. Every fool. And this is great fatherly advice. And think about again who the advice is coming from. Solomon. One who'd been burned 1,000 times, right? In a very literal sense. He says, I know, it just doesn't work that way. You get in that quiet place and you think I can cut a little bit closer than I ought to, look deeper in the eyes than I ought to, and before you know it, you've crossed the point of no return. And you kind of think each time you can do it, and each time you get burned. And if anyone knows it, it's Solomon. The fourth talk, chapter 7, and it's the most lengthy of the talks. And in fact, the fifth talk is just kind of a summary of all the four. It's like the father saying, now, let me recap for you. Point one, point two, point three. But here in number four, he's kind of been building his son up to this. And now it begins to build upon the situation and the scenario. And in chapter 7, there in verse 5, he says that they may keep you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. Sounds familiar, right? Starts off with the language, with the words, right? And she tries to lure you in. Verse 6, for at the window of my house I looked through my lattice. Now he's kind of putting himself in the shoes of that crafty woman. And here's what she's doing. Verse 7, and I saw among the simple and perceived among the youths a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. You know, this almost unfolds like it's a movie or a show. You know, I mean, he's giving these details of the woman looking out the window and the time of day and it's night and it's getting darker and this is the time which she wants to pounce. Verse 10, and there was a woman who met him, with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face. And I have found you. You know what she's saying by all that? She's saying, it's okay. We can work this out rationally in our minds and be just in all of this. I've paid my peace offerings, done my vows. We don't have to have a big conscience about this. We still have some moral aspects about us. I mean, we're not going to go out and murder somebody. Still believe in God. Let's just do this one thing. I've spread out my bed with tapestry, verse 16. Colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I perfume my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come. Let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. And by the way, she's perverting the word love. That's how the world sees love. God calls that lust. This is lust. She did not love him. If she truly loved him, she would not have done this with him. Or seek to entice him with an impudent face and with a crafty heart and with the attire of a harlot. That's lust. But how does she frame it to him? I love you. I love you. Come. Let us fulfill our love. Verse 19, for my husband's not at home. That ought to be problematic right there. What? You have a what? He's gone on a long journey. And he's taken a bag of money with him. He'll come home on the appointed day. I mean, he's already given his schedule. He's not coming back anytime soon. Yeah, like I said, this almost plays out like a movie. Something you'd see on the TV. And these imageries are given of this sinful night. You see that every sense is being utilized by Satan to tempt this young man. Were you cautious enough to catch that? Notice, you've got the sense of hearing in verse 5. The flattering words of a seductress. Sweet and tempting. So there's hearing. You've got sight. She's dressed with the attire of a harlot, showing more skin than she ought to. You've got smell. Remember what she described her bed was like? With myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. You've got taste. Remember she brought him in quickly and kissed him suddenly. And you've got touch. She catches him. All the senses being utilized, and it becomes this perfect storm. How can he say no? The power of such temptation. And you see how it is, young folks, that parents are so cautious about these things that take place between young children, because it's as old as the Bible. And then we see also the time of night. It's at night, right? The time of day. The mood is the mood of romance. There, verse 16. There's justification given, so you can kind of feel a little bit better about what we're about to do. Verse 14. And then there's your ego being stroked. She came searching for you. Out of all the guys out there, she picks you. Every pull that you've ever felt to get you to sin will be doubled, tripled, quadrupled to commit this sin. That's the way Satan works, because he knows of the consequence. Remember when Joseph, Potiphar's wife, she was essentially doing this right here. Come lie with me, over and over again. And she catches him. And he'll leave the garment. He runs for it. That's the inspiration of 1 Corinthians, of 1 Timothy. Flee also youthful lust. That's the only way. You cannot win a debate with this. You have got to run for the hills. It's the only way you emerge victorious. Joseph said, how can I do this and commit this great wickedness against God? See, he recognized that it wasn't that again, like that, you know, God sees there's other wickednesses that are more wicked than others, but he understood that it was a great wickedness because of the consequences. They could be life-lasting consequences. And essentially, that's what he goes on to describe next to his son here. He says in verse 21, with enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her as the ox goes at to the what? The slaughter. And the fools to the correction of the stocks. You ever seen those guys in the stocks? And they're there hanging there with their head out of the hole in their arms. And they're just there for days being mocked and tomatoes thrown at them and all that. He's saying they're like a fool. They went ahead and did it anyway. Verse 23, till an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he didn't know it would cost him his life. Looks like the husband came home a little earlier than expected. And he died. Died. So verse 24, here's the application. Now therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. You always think you're stronger than you really are, and everyone that she's cast down were strong. In their mind, they weren't strong enough. The only way you beat this is to not debate it, but to run from it. And so the wise man says, son, don't put yourself in the compromising situation. You run away from that. You run away from that, just like Joseph did. Not like I didn't, right? Solomon didn't do that, but Joseph did. So he wants to tell them that their lives could be changed forever. And describe this person in the story being killed, essentially. An arrow striking him in the liver. He died. But you know there's other ways to die too. There's other ways to die as well. You can lose the death of your innocence, your virginity, as we mentioned, your honor given to another. There can be a slow death if you get a sexually transmitted disease. A slow physical death. You can have the death of a reputation when you get caught and exposed. You can have the death of the peace of mind because you're plagued by these memories forever. You just don't erase those memories forever. You can have the death of self-control. It can leave you wanting more and more, creating the appetite. You're never the same again. It can be the death of your own self-image, your self-worth, because you confused love for lust, and now you feel empty, dirty, and ashamed. And of course, it will always lead to spiritual death because you stand condemned before God in such a state. So yes, oh dear son, you can be forgiven, but you'll never be the same again, is what the proverb writer is saying here. Solomon knew that better than anybody. He knew that better than anybody. Now the fifth talk there in chapter 9, we'll just read that last verse there, verse 18, because it's just a reiteration of all the various talks. But he wants to leave the last talk about this particular subject and what you should avoid in going for the search of the birds and the bees. He leaves it with this. He says, verse 18, but he does not know that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. You see, that's ultimately it as a parent. I want to spend eternity with my children. And I know my children want to spend eternity with me. And so this is one of those sins that is so complex and there's so many ways in which it weaves into the fabric of our life, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all kinds of ways, new life through pregnancies and all sorts of ways that God says, look, you got to do it the right way. You got to do this the right way. Or it's very likely you don't end up in heaven together. You don't. Now, on the good note, he ends the book of Proverbs by telling his children the one to look for. And how in contrast she is to this one described in the first 9 chapters. In Proverbs chapter 31, there in verse 10, he says, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. Now look at the way he describes this woman. He says, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he'll have no lack of gain. she doesn't seek to harm him financially. She's wise in what she does and spends. Verse 12, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Notice that, that's a long time, right? All the days of her life. He seeks to do good to the family. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She's like a merchant ship. She brings food from afar. She also rises while it's yet night and provides food for her household. What we're seeing is that this woman is selfless. She's not self-seeking, following the dictates of her own passions. She puts others first of her own family. Even her own maidservants, it says there at the end of verse 15. Verse 16, she's industrious, she's wise. She considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength, and strength strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hand to the distaff and her hand holds the spindle. When it says her lamp doesn't go out at night, it means she works into the wee hours as well. Not only should she get up when it's still dark, she's going to bed when it's dark as well. And it says, verse 20, she thinks about those beyond her family. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. You see how that's in contrast to the woman before who had the attire of a harlot? This woman knows the right clothing. It's the character. The inner person of the heart. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. That immoral woman, she is not going to have a happy life. But this woman will. A fulfilled life. She opens her mouth with wisdom. Remember the other woman? She had all these words of seducing. Evil words. But this woman, she opens her mouth with wisdom. And in her tongue is the law of kindness. She uses her tongue the way God designed it to be used. She watches over the ways of her household. She does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also. And he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. Did you get that? Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. All the times before, he said, my son, look. Watch out the way she's going to look. Proverbs 1 through 9, right? Watch out for her attire. Watch out the way she bats her eyes. But over here he says, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. It's not that it's not to be appreciated, but understand that it is something that is not to be sought after as the Holy Grail. There's other things that are more important than that. The woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. You see, that's the more important thing. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. And that's how he ends the book of Proverbs. This is the woman you need to look out for, to try and work towards. And notice again, both are at the age and stage in which they can provide and take care of. There's maturity that's there, that has been developed. It's not all about the passions of, oh, she's hot and he's cute. And all. It's not that at all. That's not been the purpose of dating or marriage. But God's saying that you might have this home where children rise up and call you blessed. And they fear the Lord together. And they can say together, as Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So may God bless us to be able to train our children so that they might have such a house as well. Understand, we face a very terrible enemy. And we dare not be ignorant of his devices. And we need to think often and even sometimes outside the box in ways in which we might be able to train our children about the way in which God has made them for their good and for his glory. And that one day we are praying for them that they'll meet the right person. And pray that with them. Pray that with them. And we've done that before. We pray even for our little children. They're 8 years old, our oldest ones. And we pray, you know, God be with that other parent and their child. That they're raising them right. that they one day could be prepared for our child. Pray these things. I believe God hears these prayers. If He heard the prayer for Abraham, for his son Isaac, for the selection of the right woman for Isaac, remember that and how that unfolded? And the servant said, well, if this woman comes out to me and says, let me give to you to drink and your camels to drink, then I'll know it's the one. Right then and there it happens. God hears these prayers. God is active and working. He just asks us to do the same. So let us be watchful, let us be vigilant, and let us do these things for the good of our children and their soul's sake. Thank you for listening so kindly tonight. If you are here and you're not a child of God, would you want to become one? We hope that you would. God wants to save you from your sin. Peter said on the day of Pentecost, repent and let every one of you be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins. And those that gladly received His word were baptized. If you'll gladly receive His word, would you be baptized this evening? And as a child of God, if you've been baptized, if you need to come back to the Lord, you need prayers from the saints, won't you come? While we stand and sing.